Welcome to a Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McGillian. I'm here today with a lot of people, actually. Most importantly, we have Amy Kaufman and Megan Spooner. Also, Bron, Tanea, and myself, Sarah, to talk about Unearthed.
Yay! Yay, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming. We're all so excited to meet. It's why we are all here with you.
I'm not going to confuse the listeners with five female voices. Like, good luck, everyone.
Should it's we just, a game.
We'll say who we are before you speak. Sarah. Tell us a bit about this amazing book that we have all read and loved.
Well, it actually came about as we were on tour for the second book in our first trilogy, the Starbound trilogy. We were in New York City, and in this amazing, gorgeous hotel right overlooking Central Park, surrounded by beautiful museums and restaurants and just the most, you know, one of the greatest cities in the world. And we were in our pajamas watching TV and eating room service because we were on tour and we were exhausted. An Indiana Jones marathon came on the TV, and we were like, all right, well, that's our day right there. And so we're like most of the way through Raiders.
We can both kind of quote along line for line, and an ad break came on, and we just started saying to each other, like, why are there not more books like this? Like, why are there not more books with...
Especially YA books.
Right? Like, YA is made for this because these stories are full of action and adventure and like, banter and, like, traps and puzzles and danger.
People swinging across chasms on ropes and, you know, falling into deadly pits and...
Yeah, and so this conversation continues over several ad breaks as we get more and more indignant.
This is, like, an embarrassingly long
time. Yeah, and, like, eventually we looked at each other and went... Oh, no, wait, so we write YA. So if we could make the book, if no one,
And of course, because it's us, it got set in space.
Obviously.
That just was a given.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't actually even discuss that.
No, it was always just going to be just in space.
So the spaceship, right? And then you just led onto it from there. And
It was like the best story ever.
Yeah.
And literally, and then at the end of tour, we went back to my house in North Carolina and sat down, and we set aside maybe like 3 or 4 days to figure out what the book was about. And we sat down on the first day, and within an hour, we knew exactly how the whole first book was going to go. It just was, it just came out so easily because it's just so right up our alleys.
So then we like just took 3 days off and ate and went to the local hot springs. Yeah. It was great.
Oh
yep.
My gosh.
Very smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is a duology?
Yeah, that's right.
And... would I be correct in that we're following the same characters in book two, or is it?
Yes, we are.
So that's new, right?
That's different for us, because the Starbound trilogy was, you know, three different couples, and in each one you would still see the previous couples, but they wouldn't be the main characters anymore until book three, which was kind of like the Avengers novel where everyone came together. But this is going to be the same people
same
for
people.
Two books.
And it picks up in the in book two pretty much where the first book left
and,
off.
Yeah.
That's
which
nice
is
to
good.
Know.
I want to know immediately what happens.
Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah, for a little bit.
Is that book in a stage of being written?
Yes, that book is nearly written. We're actually going to be finishing it off while Meg is here in Australia. Once we're done touring here, we've got 10 days at my house and we're going to finish this book.
Yep. So was it interesting to follow... to do a series where you follow the characters through, like a different experience?
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, Meg's done it before with the Skylark trilogy. She's followed the same person through. I've never done that before because Illuminae also has the different characters. So for me, I think in book two, getting to be like,
I already know these people.
Yeah, and I can just stretch further to see. It's a different experience. I'm really enjoying it.
Now, we were talking a bit before the podcast about who wrote which character. Can you say who's who?
Well, so far in all of our books, Amy has always written the male characters and I've always written the female characters. And that is also the case in Unearthed. She is responsible for Jules, the academic from Oxford, who's woefully underprepared for, you know, life as a scavenger on an alien planet. And then I wrote Amelia, who is sort of a street smart... very savvy girl who sort of puts up with his nonsense because she needs him.
She needs his know-how. She needs his
knowledge.
Academic information. I have to say, writing someone British, it was really lovely to not have to curb all my natural way of speaking.
Oh, right.
Because when I'm trying to write an American-sounding character, it's always like, no, wait, they don't say that. Oh, wait, they don't say that.
There's always some point in each book where we would read through and like be like, that's Australian... That's Australian. This is how you would say it if you were American.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not that you have to completely change things. No, but at the same time, if you're writing for an international audience and you know people literally won't understand your slang, then
you
that's
need to
not
say
helpful.
Something they will get.
Yeah, exactly. You need to find something everyone can understand. And Australian slang is so weird that not everything's obvious from context. Because I think, well, sometimes people say, oh, well, the internationals can just make an effort the same way we do for their books. But we have some weird slang.
We do. Yeah,
so it doesn't always work that way. I taught Meg pump up your tyres this morning.
Yeah.
I was explaining. Yeah, I was talking about someone pumping up their tyres.
Was it off like a frog in a sock?
I taught her that as well,
which those are the ones I find delightful, because what does that even mean? Like, who's putting frogs in socks and analyzing the response? Like, I don't...
Australians. I don't want to do that. I had a funny one the other day from my mother, and I don't know how Australian is, but she was like, you could do that on your pink ear. And I was like, what?
What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't know.
Goodness. I shall be Googling it after the podcast.
Yeah, and she's like, it just means you could do it easily. And I'm like, no, I understand. From context, I understand what it means, but where did that come from?
Why?
One of our great anecdotes from These Broken Stars is that our editor, upon reading it, came back and said, you know, one of the things I just love is all of the sort of futuristic space slang that Tarver uses. And meanwhile, Amy and I are like, it just has some Australian slang because it just
Australian
crept in
from
there.
The future.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, the future is Australian. And so, but the problem was Meg had been living here for a year, and
so
she'd
catch
lost
everything.
Her ear. Mm-hmm. She'd stopped noticing. Mm-hmm. So
they were slipping past you.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really writing someone British, because, you know, I'm Aussie with an Irish mother. It was really nice to be like, how would I say this? And also, I mean, like, I'm a bit of an academic and he's a bit of an academic, and we both kind of use a long word when, you know, we use a 10-cent word when a 5-cent word would do.
For me, it was quite a challenge writing Mia because she's the exact opposite of that. Whereas I am like that. I will use the 10-cent word, but Mia is not like that at all. And so it was actually really fun to get to just...
And Mia's like this street smart scavenger who would thrive in the wild, whereas like Meg and I, we're indoor pets.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was not a write what you know, it was like a write what you dream
what you wish
be.
You could be.
Well, I had guessed the other way around. And I don't even know why. I think it was because I think in some way I read that you were really into archaeology. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, maybe...
That did occur to us a short way in, because Meg did study archaeology at college.
And occasionally I would step in and be like,
yeah,
this is what you
But about chapter three, I did think to myself, why am I writing the archaeologist when my idea of archaeology comes from Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I suspect some of his undertakings are not best practice. I think some of his archaeological habits might not be...
Maybe in spacey future, though, they are.
I mean, we're in a state of desperation. I mean, he is already breaking the law of, like, you know, international government.
And I mean, lives, they've smuggled themselves onto this planet, and lives are on the line.
Boundaries are being tested.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask about all the... you know, the puzzles that they have to solve. How did you, like, tell us about coming up with those. What is that like? How did you come up with this thing?
I mean, it was fun and probably also the greatest challenge of the book.
Yes. For us. Like, you know when you write the outline and you're like,
a puzzle goes here.
Yeah. and the puzzle will be, like, really clever and challenging, and the reader will kind of solve it alongside the character, and it'll be great. And then you get there and you're like,
think of it later.
Past Amy, past Meg, you're jerks is what
you are. So what we did was... we actually consulted experts outside of ourselves.
Okay.
I knew, and we sort of have different ownership sort of the different puzzles, although we both worked on all of them. But like, so one of the ones that I'm really proud of, there's a mathematical musical puzzle. It's one of the first ones they encounter. And I actually have a friend who is both a mathematician and a music grad student. And so I worked with him and was like, here's what I want it to look like. Here's how I want it to be in the story. How do you make this work? And he actually was able to work with me, and we could make something that was both accurate and, like, true and possible, but also, like, cool and mysterious and...
Yeah, exactly.
Indiana Jonesy.
That's it. And we wanted to put a lot of notes into the various puzzles that will kind of reward the rereader, so that then later when you read it again, you'll be like,
well, I'll be reading tonight.
That was a bit of a... The way that puzzle discussed the concept of time was a bit of a hint, or the way this... You know, so, like, there's a puzzle that is about kind of words and conjugating words and so on, and so we spoke to a friend of ours who's a linguist and said, like, what are some... hallmarks of language that run through a whole bunch of different languages and
like
started,
not just romance languages, but like,
yeah, what do we all do? And started building, and then she wrote this very long explanation, and I understood some of that explanation, and so I said, let's do a puzzle about this bit because it was the only bit I understood.
This much.
And then you give it back to them, and they read it, and they're like, yes, that makes sense. Or, as is often the case, you completely misunderstood me. You are totally wrong.
And did you then give it to people like in your friend circle to say, can you solve this too easily, or do you completely surprised to I test if they worked?
We did. I mean, the whole book got run through a couple of author friends to read it for us to give us back comments. And they both said it's that about right for them, and we felt like they were a good average reader. But mostly we were so delighted to have finally got the okay from the experts. These books are always, in the best way, like an odyssey into... I had no idea how complex that fact check was about to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, at the beginning of the book, we wanted to make it a little hard to be on this planet. So we said that the air wasn't going to be quite like Earth's air. There was going to be some, we didn't know what, but some little difference to it that meant that, you know, you couldn't just run around and do action sequences and breathe, that you had to... you know, make a bit of an effort. There was
a
barrier.
We also didn't want them to all just be in spacesuits the whole time because, you know.
Yeah, because in a spacesuit, you lose a lot of body language and facial expression, and also the logistics are a nightmare.
You can't have, like, kissing scenes.
Yeah.
Somebody suffocating to death.
You just be banging your legs, like, you banging your face plates together. But it turns out, who knew? I guess people who know things about this, that it's really hard to come up with a type of air that does that job that doesn't require a permanent breather on your face, which you don't want because then you can't see facial expressions, which are really important to describe. And you also need a problem that can be solved without needing to lug around massive oxygen tanks. So, I mean, 76 attempts later, we got the okay on that as well.
Wow. Yeah. You never know what goes into all of this, because then we just get to pick it up and read it, and it's great fun.
Well, that's the thing.
That's the goal.
That's the thing about science fiction, is that there's so much more research that goes into making sure that it is scientifically accurate. Or
possible.
As we say, say scientifically plausible, because obviously, you know, faster than light travel and gravity on spaceships and sort of...
If we could do those things, we would not be here talking to you. We would
be
in
space
right now. Yeah, but ideally, you don't kind of see all of that research, even though we sometimes would love to stop the book and give you a lecture on like, hey, do you know how long it took us to learn this? Can we write you a page now to describe it because we're so proud we know it? Can't do that.
No.
But at the same time, if you do it really well, people don't notice that it's happening. But I tell you what, they would notice if it wasn't.
Yeah.
People
absolutely.
Notice when it's actually just sort of fantasy in space, when it's magic in space.
Yeah. So it's like the beauty of proper world building is that it's all backed up by a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, and you sense it even if you don't read every detail, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm now obsessed with the idea of rereading those puzzles.
I know.
Because it was so tricky to say something like that. Now
I mean, just to mess with you, there's hints everywhere in this book. It's not just the puzzles.
Yeah.
There's
so maybe we should read this for book club next month.
Maybe we should.
When we've all read it already, but whatever.
Like, when we decided to write this book, it was kind of a reaction to all of the intricacies that we put into the Starbound trilogy. We were like, let's, for our next book, just write something that's just, like, really fun. And so that was our plan.
Yeah, like an adventure romp.
Yeah, but because it's us, we put in all the complexity and, like, secrets and backstories and twists in there anyway.
But that's
amazing
just
twist.
As fun.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. It's fun for us too, but
it
more
is,
so in hindsight.
Tanea, do you have a question you'd like to ask? I feel like you haven't had a chance.
My questions have like kind of been answered because like the puzzle thing was my thing, but I guess I'll just like leave a compliment. But I loved when like Jules? I read this in July. It was so long ago. But
Jules.
I love when he turns up with like all his gear and he's like, get rid of it all. I love that so much.
I love their dynamic.
I loved it as well.
So great.
Well, I think, I mean, we always end up writing, thank you, first.
Yes,
typical,
thank you.
Terrible at taking compliments, so
yeah.
Just pretend they didn't happen and keep going. But in all three Starbound books, we wrote people from two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I think no matter what Meg and I set out to do, we always end up writing about people from two different worlds. You know, whether it's like sort of princess and soldier or, you know, rebel and soldier. And in this case, it's Jules who's, I mean, the moment you mentioned Danae, when he shows up on the planet and he has two of everything and these crisp khakis and a pack full of
silverware and multiple pillows.
What are you doing here?
Like, he bought a butter knife, you know, like this, like, he's an indoor pet. He's an academic and he's heard about how one does this stuff, but he's never been on an archaeological expedition that didn't have all the creature comforts. And so he shows up with just everything he doesn't need. And then there's Mia, who shows up with
and just looks basically at his pack, like,
what's in her pockets.
Yeah.
And is like, oh, honey, no. And throws away half his stuff to help him survive. But
the reason that we always do the two different worlds thing is that we're actually quite different.
Yeah.
The thing is, we're such good friends and, like, you know, come across, we have so many similar interests, but, like, who we are very, like, complementary personalities. And so I think we tend towards these stories about these, like, friendships and relationships between people who are just totally different from each other, because that's interesting. There are tensions there and, like, interesting things to explore.
Yeah, you know, I had never thought about that. We're having a revelation
it's
live
beautiful.
On the podcast. No, but I think you're right, because I think the thing is, the friendships you have with people who are a bit different to you are the most rewarding, because you both have to dig a bit deeper to understand the other person and to work out what makes them tick and to respect those parts of them. And to, you know, treat them as they need to be treated. And so I think, because, I mean, we've been friends for over a decade now, and, like, we talk every day, whether we're working or not.
Yeah.
We text constantly, we video call all the time.
Every morning and night we do, like, handover where we check in, because, you know, I'm waking up as she's going to sleep here in Australia and vice versa.
Yeah, and the handover email will always be like, 1, I wrote this for our newsletter today. 2, I did this work on the chapter. 3, you won't believe what the dog did. So
4, look at this YouTube video.
Yeah.
5, have you seen the new episode of Lucifer?
Yeah.
Oh my god, Lucifer.
Oh, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
If anyone wants to start a Lucifer podcast, I'm just saying, I will
join in.
I've just started it. I'm hooked already.
You are in for a treat.
Excellent.
Meg started it after I just kind of nonstop harassed her.
We traded. I gave her the good place and she gave me Lucifer.
Yeah.
It was a good trade.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you've told this story so many times, and as you're sitting in front of 3 super fans, we are. But for people out there listening to podcasts who may not know, could you run over how you guys met and started writing together?
Yeah, so we met writing fan fiction together. We met in the fandom for a series that nobody really reads anymore, The Dragon Riders of Pern by Anne McCaffrey. And, I mean, the thing is, Anne McCaffrey was the first woman to make the New York Times bestseller list for science fiction, and she was also the first woman to be made a grandmaster, which is the highest honor in science fiction. Yeah. These days, when you look back at those books,
it's problematic.
There are some problems, you know, there's some gender stuff.
Don't say that, because I haven't reread them.
And don't. The thing is, like, they were written at the time they were written,
yeah.
and in many ways they were progressive, but they weren't perfect, and there are some problematic angles in them. But Anne McCaffrey built worlds like few people ever have. Her worlds are epic
worlds
and
sweeping.
Worlds
that make you want to be in them.
Yes, you're desperate to go. And so, of course, that's how fan fiction happens, right? Is you want to be in the world.
Yeah.
And so Meg and I met writing that together
and
then started writing it together and creating our own characters and so on. And eventually, after years, like, the game that we had been writing this stuff on shut down, and we were like, well, let's just do our own. And then after a little while after that, it became, why don't we do something original?
Yeah.
And it was literally just, we went, well, we like shipwrecks and we like space, so let's do a shipwreck in space. Well, we were only doing it for ourselves.
It was
just
for fun.
It didn't need to be more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And then we thought, who would be fun to be shipwrecked together? Who would hate each other?
Mm-hmm.
And so we created Tava and Lilac.
And it wasn't even originally meant to be a romance.
No,
like,
they were meant to hate each other.
and
we thought that we would get bored of them quite quickly. But
yeah.
We were like, well, it's a big ship, right? So if we get bored of them, we'll just, like, go write some other survivors who crashed in a different part of the planet, and maybe eventually they can all meet or something.
So our plan was that we would write, like, play with them for a couple of weeks and then make up some new characters or whatever. And then a year later, we are still playing Lilac and Tarver.
And they've fallen in love.
And by that point, I had sold my first novel. And so suddenly, for both of us, this whole, wait,
this is a thing we can do.
Yeah.
Suddenly became real, and
we thought, well, what if we? Yeah, we'll just try turning their story into a book with no real expectation.
Yeah.
And it went pretty well.
Yeah.
Actually,
I would say so. But to this day, we still, I mean, whenever we start a new book, whenever we write a new book, we still
kind
do
of
that,
like role play it together.
Role playing characters.
We still write little scenes about their histories and their backgrounds, and we'll write little scenes where we're literally just in the same document. I'll be like, well, my guy would do and say this. Mm-hmm. And then Meg will say, well, she would do that kind of thing in response. Mm-hmm. And we work out how they play off each other.
And so that we get like an organic relationship that grows between them.
Yeah. So I think sometimes when you're, if it's one person writing all the characters, what you have to be careful of is that you don't have your main character who does all kinds of complex things and then everyone else who just does what is convenient to make the story go. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you start thinking about, well, what would that person do if they were the protagonist? And what would they agree or disagree, or would they make things difficult, or, you know, and so that's what we're kind of doing for each other, is making sure both the characters are fleshed out.
I find that so beautiful.
So do I.
And heartwarming. It's a beautiful friendship.
It's a pretty great job.
It's pretty good. We talk often about how lucky we are that we get to do this. Play like this for a living.
Yeah, we and that, I mean, literally, that bit where we're scoping at the story at the start, we literally refer to it as playing.
Yeah, do you have time to play tonight?
Yeah. like small children.
I mean, the thing is, once you get into the writing of the book and the editing of the book, it is definitely hard work. I mean, not to, like, you know, rose-tinted glasses for the aspiring authors out there. It is still work, but it's work that is very fun to be able to do together.
Yeah, well, and I think that there's this weird thing we do in our society where we assume if something is hard work, it is therefore unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's actually, it's possible to work really hard at something and also enjoy it.
Because mm-hmm. It's rewarding.
Yeah.
It's something that you love.
Yeah, and it's where you want to be.
Ladies, thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
We've been so excited to meet you guys. We love this book, and we hope that everybody has it for Christmas because
and reads it and loves it.
Multiple times so you can find out the clues. Right.
And then email Booktopia and
help us out. So, podcast listeners, you can get Unearthed and all of Megan and Amy's books online at booktopia.com.au. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.